Well, Frederick Peterson, you talk about one of the clauses I'm going to take out of your statements. I think you said expansionist policies at record speed. You were referring to Russia. Well, can't we refer that to the U.S. in this case, looking at how they have embraced the interim government, how they have moved in terms of their support, how they have imposed these sanctions? I mean, don't you think that the U.S. is moving a little too fast here when you want to take the costs that are going to be involved, especially onto Europe? But in terms of the U.S.'s moves?
I think the U.S. is not moving at all, in fact, or virtually at to make a snail's pace look like a foot race. No, the U.S. is not moving too fast. I should say that this action on the part of the Russians has precedent. The most startling precedent would be the Nazi move into the Sudetenland in defense of supposedly a German minority that was pleading with them to come and rescue them, and then attaching that Sudetenland to the motherland of Germany. And the West looked at this, or I should say the Allies looked at this and declared, all right, you can have a little nibble at the pie and a larger nibble and a larger. We will have peace in our time. To argue the same in up to the naked Russian aggression prepared in advance and occurring in record speed in the Ukraine is just as dangerous. And we see that months after the German move into Sudetenland, we were fighting the most terrible war the world has ever known. We are risking the same thing by rewarding aggression here. It would be the same as if the United States were to decide we are going to move into Canada because there is a besieged English minority there, or Eskimos, perhaps, that vote overwhelmingly to join the United States. So we are going to acquire our northern neighbor and dare the world to do something about it. This is utterly irresponsible behavior. The United States has not moved into Western Ukraine and offered them statehood. And that is the analogy to what the Russians are doing to the Eastern Ukraine. I plead with the world, as all of good faith should do, to stop this before it goes any further. Take a stern stand against aggression.
Okay.
Whether it
let's
is
get
from
a reaction.
The West
let's get
or
a reaction. I'm sorry, Frederick Peterson,
before
to jump
it's
in.
Too late.
Let's get a reaction from James Jatras. Do you agree with the stance there of Frederick Peterson?
No, not at all. First off, as far as Canada goes, again, the analogy would be as if some extra hemispheric power was involved in a violent change of government in Ottawa and then tried to bring Canada, against the will of the majority of Canadians, into a hostile attitude toward the United States. This would be a vital threat to the United States. I hope we would not tolerate any such thing. And if we had to use a pretext like there are an English-speaking community in Canada that's being threatened, yes, then let's use that pretext. Our interests would be at stake. For example, the analogy has been made by one retired American military man that what the Russians have done in Crimea, where they have a base, is in some ways comparable to the 1989 intervention in Panama by Bush the Elder, where we were protecting Americans in the Canal Zone. Of course, there we took the opportunity to overthrow the government and arrest the president, Manuel Noriega, for drug trafficking and all that sort of thing. As far as what the Russian position would be if we did intervene in Canada, and let's suppose they were not involved in some coup or revolution or whatever you want to call it there, I think the Russian attitude has generally been that they respect our sphere of influence in the Western Hemisphere, under the Monroe Doctrine. Remember, Mr. Putin closed the Russian facilities in Cuba that they inherited from the Soviet time, but we don't seem to concede the same primacy of interest in places like Ukraine, which are, as I say, vital to Russian national security.
Well, Frederick Peterson, you painted a scenario where the U.S. is not moving fast enough. I'd like to get your reaction for what the former U.S. ambassador to Russia, Michael McFaul, said on Obama's action plan when it comes for Ukraine. And he said that it was a worst-case scenario. He wouldn't go into details, but he described it as being a worst-case scenario in terms of what Obama's action plan is going to be. And, of course, this comes as we see the U.S. continuing to beef up its military forces close to the Ukrainian border. What do you think would be the worst-case scenario?
A worst-case scenario for the world would be a conflagration, because there is a misjudgment on both sides based on a toleration of a little bit of aggression, tolerating and rewarding a little bit of aggression with success is merely rewarding that bad behavior. What you reward, you get more of, and there will be more bad behavior until we reach a point where the world in a weakened position will finally say no, and God knows where we will all end up then. In terms of the plebiscite, which was organized in about, oh, say, 20 minutes inside eastern Ukraine to ally with Russia with an utterly unfathomable 97% of the vote saying yes, where there was a very large percentage of the population boycotted the election, no calls for international supervision, let alone even international monitors. This is an utter sham, must be rejected. There are ways to negotiate out of this, but only if there is negotiation through strength, not writing of diplomatic letters or coming out with personal sanctions against some Soviet officials that have utterly no teeth. It's like gummy. It's like having a pit bull with gums instead of teeth, who can yap a lot but has no bite. And this, I am afraid, will be the reward, seeing further aggression as the result of that reward.
It's interesting you talk about this being a reward there for Russia. James Dutross, Russia has been very quick, and they have come out responding after Crimea's secession. They've made some demands, James Dutross. I'd like to get your reaction on them. That Ukraine accept Crimea's secession, Ukraine adopts a federal constitution that decentralizes power and introduces direct regional elections, and then, of course, the formation of an international support group for Ukraine. Now, Ukraine has announced that it's ready for negotiations, but they're not going to accept the Crimea referendum. So where would this go between Ukraine and Russia?
Well, I do agree with the gentleman that the worst outcome here would be a conflagration caused by miscalculation, by steps that inadvertently lead us into developments that nobody might have anticipated at the beginning of that. And frankly, I do think that's a real problem. I mean, here we are just a few months away from the 100th anniversary of August 1914, and I don't think anybody expected after Sarajevo it would lead to what it led to. This time, no Christmas truce, though. As far as what you mentioned in terms of decentralization and so forth, this addresses the issues that the Russians have been talking about since February 21st, when there was supposed to be a power-sharing deal between the opposition and Yanukovych, the president at that time. And it was immediately rejected by people on the street, which includes some very violent elements, that as soon as the authorities pulled back the police with clubs and Molotov cocktails, seized control of all the government buildings, forcing the government to flee, basically grabbed all the marbles and say, this extreme Western view of Ukraine now will be the only one. We hold all the power, and there's nothing you can do in East Ukraine, nothing you can do in Crimea about it, nothing you can do about it in Moscow. And that's what prompted the Russian response. I think if we were to address those in terms of reconciliation within Ukraine and also the legitimate Russian and European interests in Ukraine, in some kind of a Finlandization that Henry Kissinger, for example, has called for, I think we might have a constructive dialogue. But simply to say, let's hurt the Russians, let's punish the Russians and cause them to back down, is going to lead exactly to what the gentleman in Tampa says it should not, because the Russians cannot afford to back down.
Very well, we're going to have to leave it there. Unfortunately, we're fresh out of time. I wish we could continue this maybe in a further debate. Let me thank our guests, former U.S. Senate Foreign Policy Analyst James Dutrost there from Washington and Congressional Defense Policy Advisor Frederick Peterson spoke to us from Tampa. Thanks for watching another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Batakwe and the entire team in the capital, Tehran. Just goodbye.